You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll talk about a vegetable that's at its peak right now, peppers. A Wisconsin farmer gives us some fresh ideas on using them up and tells us what can make them more or less spicy. And we'll ask for your favorite peppers and how you like to use them. Now, when's the last time you learned a new skill for the first time? Drawing, maybe, an instrument, a sport, a craft. If it's been a while, you're not alone. When we grow up, a lot of us leave behind the regular practice of trying to learn new things. And being a beginner in anything can be uncomfortable. But our next guest says we should keep at it, and there are ways to get over the intimidation of starting out at square one. He says a new skill, whether it's surfing or singing, chess, or anything else, can keep us more engaged in all facets of our lives. Tom Vanderbilt writes on design, technology, science, and culture, and is the author of several books. His latest is called Beginners, The Joy and Transformative Power of Lifelong Learning. We talked with Tom earlier this year. Here's a listen to that conversation. You write that you're inspired in part by being a new parent, and even more so when your daughter and then you started taking on a chess. Talk about how that experience inspired your quest to learn how and why grownups can learn.
Sure. My daughter was 4 at the time when she asked if we could play a game of chess. And this was sort of embarrassing for me, but I actually didn't know how. And I tried to learn the game myself to pick it up, but it's a pretty complex game. So I felt a little bit over my head, ended up hiring a coach. This coach came over to give my daughter some lessons. And then I figured, what, I'd like to learn this as well. Why should I just sort of sit on the sidelines? And this was a pattern in my life where I was taking my daughter, who had this, like all children do, this real hunger for learning. I was taking her to all these lessons and then just sort of sitting on my phone usually nearby. And I thought, you know what? What's the last new skill I learned? I'm going to plunge in and do some of the things she's doing as well as some other things. And that was sort of the idea.
And you learned something there that keeps coming up through your book. Kids learn things one way, and it seems like they're, you know, really good at it in their way. Adults learn things, it seems like, in a different way. What is it about being a grown-up that makes that new thing different than it is for that 4-year-old, say?
Yeah, I mean, there's two sort of broad categories here. There's the brain stuff, which, you know, kids just have these brains that are really optimized for learning, and they have these synapses that are, you know, sort of being connected, and just a real hunger. And they have a very quick, what's called fluid intelligence. Adults, you know, I was in my 40s. I had 4 decades of already learning a bunch of other stuff, which was sort of sitting in my brain like an old crowded hard drive on your computer. So for me to learn something new, you know, I've got to get past all that other stuff. And if I go to learn a new language, well, maybe it sounds a little bit like another language I learned, or maybe my English grammar gets in the way of my Spanish grammar. But so the brain is one thing, but there's the whole lifestyle question as well. I mean, children, number one, very young children, most of the things they're learning are very important to them to learn. They're learning how to walk, to talk, to get along with other people. Adults, you know, when we learn, it tends to be, you know, sort of a more recreational thing, sort of hobbies. That's not necessarily survival at stake. But the other key thing there is pressure and fear. Kids, you know, just plunge in. They really don't know much pressure or fear. Adults, you know, overthink things. We worry about looking bad in front of other people. So it's hard.
Let's talk a little bit about the why. You know, if I pick up, and I have been trying to pick up new things. If I pick up something new at this stage in my life, I know I'm never going to be a star, an expert. It's not going to be my, I'm not going to make money doing it. So why do I want to learn a new thing in the first place, Tom?
Yeah, I think we've all been sort of, corrupted or whatever the word is by this 10,000 hours rule that people have probably heard about, which was from the sociologist Anders Ericsson, talking about how much practice you needed to become an expert level performer. Of course, you know, most of us don't have, you know, 100 hours to try to tackle something. But the good news is we don't need to be expert level performers. So I would argue that, you know, in 10 hours, I mean, the amount of time you might spend watching, binging a Netflix show, you could actually pick up some fairly decent skills in something like drawing. I mean, the great thing about the learning curve is that it's steep, which means at the beginning you're making a lot of progress. There will be plateaus later, but that's sort of the great thing about learning, and what makes it so addictive in a way about being a beginner is that just that sort of excitement and thrill at the beginning, you're learning something new. And I would argue that you're really changing your self-identity a little bit. You're sort of expanding the notion of who you are, and then you can add these things to your sort of life resume, as it's been called, like I'm so-and-so, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a singer. It took me a while to feel comfortable calling myself a singer, but I'll own it now.
Now, one interesting thing you did was surfing, not a community, you write, that's necessarily known for being welcoming to the newcomer. But one thing you learned there and took as a lesson, and this is generally true, you can make some early progress, but there's often a point you hit where you get worse, or at least it feels like you get worse. It's the U-shaped learning curve. What is that, and how can we keep going past it?
Yeah, I mean, progress is not always linear. If you're learning to do something like surf, one day you'll go to the ocean, to the surf break. It feels like you've got it dialed in. You're hitting all of these waves. The next day, maybe the conditions change just a little bit. Something is off. You're still learning, and you catch zero waves. And there's various reasons for that, but often what's happening is you're approaching some sort of plateau, and you know you're when it hurts, when your brain hurts, that's when you're learning. You know, the sad thing here is that, you know, when it feels good, that's when you've learned it, and that's a very nice feeling to have as an adult, to feel competent in something. But that means the learning has stopped. So if you're going to go after that next goal, it's going to have to hurt again, and that again is something that, you know, humans quite naturally try to avoid when possible, is having things frustrate them. But that is when learning is actually happening.
Tom, you mentioned becoming a singer, and you hadn't been someone who people thought of as a singer. You went and you looked for a singing group that was, you know, easy enough for you to get into, but hard enough and good enough to present a challenge to you. Why was that the level you were shooting for?
Yeah, a psychologist call that desirable difficulty, where, you know, you're pushed just a little bit beyond the edge of your comfort zone. And, you know, I had been taking these private vocal lessons, which were fun, and I was making a lot of progress, but it also felt a little bit sterile. I was, you know, sort of like, imagine, you know, doing soccer drills in a gym day after day, like kicking the ball against the wall. I wanted to get out and sort of be in a real environment, like a game. So, you know, a choir to me seemed the safe zone, where I could be out in public performing, but have 50 or 60 people around me. So it wasn't, you know, no solos involved here. But but again, like, that's the great thing about learning in a class or a group with people. There were people of varying skill sets around me. I could draw upon their experience. After I was there a little while, suddenly I had a little bit of experience. I could sort of tell when a new person had joined the choir, and they had that deer in the headlights sort of look. And then I became, you know, let's say a small scale expert. But that's sort of, there's sort of a magic sweet spot that happens with people learning new things together. It's called a community of practice. And you know, we can use each other as a resource, not just the teacher.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dan is with us in Milwaukee. Dan, hello.
Hello. All right, let me start off by saying my motto is everything is easy. All you have to do is try. And for the pandemic, I remodeled the bathroom, made a Volkswagen trike, built it out of a car, and got into EDM music composition with drum machines and synthesizers and all that. So,
well, let's take that musical composition, Dan. Had you done something like that before?
No. I actually have no rhythm whatsoever. That's why I had to do it electronically.
I love it. Dan, thank you so much for sharing that. So, I don't know, Dan thinks everything's easy if you try it. There's still some challenges along the way, though, Tom, but I do like that attitude.
Yeah, and sometimes these things are sort of, you know, placed upon us from the outside. I mean, what he was saying about remodeling his bathroom, I've just moved into a house. I've been living in an apartment for many years where the super took care of things. Suddenly I'm in this house. I'm kind of a beginner in owning a house, so you know, all these home maintenance things that a lot of people take for granted, they're like very new to me. And I've already been making, you know, some stupid mistakes, but I'm trying.
Now, and Dan also mentioned he's doing this stuff during the pandemic. You started this book, this project, at least, Tom, pre-pandemic. Do you see people taking on this idea of, hey, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to try something new?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, the pandemic, one thing about it is that it really turned us all into beginners of a sort. I mean, no one really was that cognizant in Zoom or remote schooling via computer for elementary school children. I mean, they're all wearing a mask. There were all these things we had to sort of fit into our daily life that were new and prevent, you know, it was a little bit unsettling. And after a little while, we got the drill. But you're right. So that sense of disruption, people you know, didn't have their normal commute to work. They had a little extra time, or they weren't able to do the things they normally did, open this huge window. And you basically look at all these metrics, like websites like Duolingo, the language app, or sales of guitars and guitar lesson sites, or chess learning websites have all absolutely exploded during the pandemic. If you're a gardener, you can't order seeds right now. I mean, we've sort of had, you know, we're hitting peak hobby, I think, which I think is great news, but it's definitely at a different place than I was a few years ago when I started the book.
Right now, we're re-listening to our conversation with Tom Vanderbilt about his book, Beginners, The Joy and Transformative Power of Lifelong Learning. He's a journalist who writes about design, technology, science, and culture. He joined the show earlier this year. You can still let us know your story by emailing or tweeting. Have you learned a new skill or hobby as an adult? Are you working on getting better at anything right now? How's it going? And is there something you'd still like to learn about that you haven't gotten into yet? Email us, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at @CentralTimeWPR. Coming up, we'll find out how we can try new things without being self-conscious about not being as good as we want to be. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're revisiting a conversation from earlier this year about learning new things and getting over the intimidation factor of a new skill or hobby. Our guest is journalist and author Tom Vanderbilt. His latest book is called Beginners, The Joy and Transformative Power of Lifelong Learning. He says learning something new, whether it's baking or quilting or anything in between, has a lot of benefits. It can keep us happier and more engaged in many different parts of our lives. During our chat, we heard about one listener's experience learning a new instrument at a later age. Here's a listen to that story. Oh, we got an email from Pete in Reedsburg. Pete says he took up guitar at age 66, guitar for the first time. He's working on a YouTube channel. He says the nice thing about trying new things when you're old is that not only do you not care what others think of you, you've had time to figure out they were never thinking of you at all. Thanks for sending that in, Pete. And that's a thing for me, Tom, overcoming the self-consciousness. I've been trying to learn Spanish on one of those free language apps and some other ways. Long street going. Great. I know the thing I need to do is find places where I have to speak to people in Spanish, and I'm just scared. I get paid to talk for a living, and the idea of, you know, talking worse than a little kid could talk, I don't know, it fills me with anxiety. How do we overcome, as Pete has, that self-consciousness?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You know, we spend our adult lives trying to project an image of competence. You know, you're working on your job, your career, your resume. You don't highlight the things you're not that good at on your resume. So to suddenly go out there in public and be sort of bad at something, you know, but he's right. You know, that there is this, on the other hand, there's this thing called imposter syndrome, where sometimes even in our jobs, we're sort of thinking, are we really that qualified? But that's what's sort of so liberating about plunging into something, especially with a class of other beginners, so then you're kind of all at you know, square one, that you're not worried about imposter syndrome because no one actually expects you to be any good. And I think a lot of that, I think, comes with age definitely helps, I think, put a little bit of that stuff in the rearview mirror, and you lose that fear. But yeah, so I still suffer from it myself. I mean, it's not something that you can do away with, I think.
Let's go back to our callers. Sandy is with us in Mauston. Sandy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What have you learned, Sandy?
Well, I tell you, I'm a retired teacher. I used to do substitute teaching until COVID, and I had to do something. So I watched a lot of tutorials, and I'm learning to paint.
Cool. How's
and
it going?
I'm absolutely loving it.
Uh-huh. And do you feel like you're picking it up pretty quick, Sandy?
I feel like I am, yes. There are communities on Facebook where you can post your pictures, your paintings, and you get feedback. And, yeah, I found out I can actually paint, and I'm even learning to draw.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear that, Sandy. And I like that, Tom, that she's joined a community and they're, you know, they offer advice and hopefully positive, constructive feedback. But again, that idea of having a community of people you're learning with seems like a big boost for this, as you discovered, Tom.
Absolutely. I mean, the motivation, the sense of sort of responsibility of getting feedback. And it sounds like also that she is taking classes online, which is something that, you know, when I was working on my book, because I wanted to, you know, get out and meet people and hear their stories, I was doing all in-person classes. And then, of course, when COVID happened, all of this stuff shifted online. I was a bit skeptical in the beginning, but I've taken online drawing courses. And in some ways, there's things you can do with technology online that are as good as, or in some ways even better than in person. So I think that's really that sort of revolution. And there's a lot of stuff that's available for free or not that expensive, you know, classes, videos, you can hire coaches all around the world, has really, again, made this sort of a golden age of learning, I think.
Thanks a lot for the call, Sandy. Keep it up for sure. We'll go to Ted now in Spooner. Ted, hello.
Yeah, hello.
What are you doing, Ted, or what have you done?
Well, when I was 65, I tried downhill or snowboarding, downhill skiing, but it switched over to snowboard. Well, that was a challenge. But I can say one thing. The younger people thought it was really cool that I was trying, and they stopped by and gave me hints left and right on how to do it.
All right. Did you keep it up, Ted, or was it a one-off like my downhill skiing experience was?
Well, I'd done it for 4 or 5 years, but now I had a total knee replacement, And the other knee is about ready to go. I don't think I should try it again.
That seems very reasonable. Ted, thank you for sharing that. That was one of the things, Tom, that you and I think your daughter again tried together.
Yeah, I'm not much of a skier, and I was not a snowboarder at all. But, you know, again, just I thought, okay, let's try it. And, you know, I sort of had this magic transformation of, and this is what I'm trying to, you know, urge in people. Just after one day, I had become basically a snowboarder. I'm not saying I was good at all, but I had ridden on a snowboard down a hill, which I think qualifies as a snowboarder. And this had not been in my life at all. And I mean, the caller raised a couple other interesting things. You know, there's this thing about one thing that's when learning a new skill, one frustrating thing is that the skills often don't transfer as well as we think they might. You'd think snowboarding and skiing are pretty identical, but there's a lot of different things there. And it can be hard, you know, the longer you've been doing one sport, to sort of switch over. And they do say snowboarding is easier to in the beginning and then harder to master. And it's the opposite with skiing. I'm not sure if that's actually true, but kudos to Ted for, you know, not letting age get in the way. And I'm 52 now, but I've had experiences of doing things like playing video games, online video games with my daughter, Fortnite squads. And I get kudos from her 9-year-old friends. I'm not sure what that's worth, but, you know, again, it's about sort of looking forward and not thinking you're ever too old or anything's inappropriate for you to learn, you know, at any age.
Now, can you talk about getting through the moments of frustration, that U-shaped curve we talked about earlier where I thought I was getting good and now I'm getting worse or at best plateauing? How do we power through that to get to the good side again?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just really have to walk away. I mean, rest. And there's, you know, sometimes taking a week off and your brain sort of works on the puzzles that you had in your head without even knowing it subconsciously and sort of sorts it out almost magically, I would say. And there's coaches have all sorts of tricks as well, too. I mean, just in terms of learning juggling, for example, I would sometimes be struggling and I seemed like I had it, then I suddenly couldn't get it. I almost, you know, had the equivalent of writer's block, but for juggling, I just couldn't juggle. So they would say, well, you know, change the room you're doing it in, change the backdrop you're throwing the balls against, change the hand you throw the ball with first, change the objects you're throwing. Basically, just change is good. It sort of like sparks the brain into thinking, approaching a problem from a new angle, which is really, you know, another thing that learning really is. It's just finding new solutions to new problems as they arise. If you do one drill too much, you sort of like over practice something, and it's really diminishing returns because it will only help solve one problem, where something like snowboarding, a lot of different things can happen. So you need to be very flexible. And this is something that another thing that really distinguishes infant and child learners is that kind of flexibility. They learn a lot through playful exploration, which includes a lot of mistakes as well.
In our last few moments, Tom, you've learned singing, surfing, juggling, chess, Fortnite, you just mentioned. Do you have your eye on your next learning project?
Well, my daughter just joined a mountain biking club, so I have on order a mountain bike. It's coming to me, but because of COVID, there's a huge demand for these sorts of things. So it's been a little bit delayed, but I expect to be out on the hills pretty soon.
All right. Well, best of luck to you on that. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That was my conversation with Tom Vanderbilt. He writes about design, technology, science, and culture, and is the author of several books. His latest, the subject of that conversation, Beginners, The Joy and Transformative Power of Lifelong Learning. He joined the show earlier this year, and that conversation kept going online. We heard from Dave, who commented on WPR.org. He wrote, I achieved a long-time goal by obtaining my private pilot license, at age 60. It was a challenge to sit down and book learn again. Dave goes on, the online resources and videos were a great help, especially the practice testing. It took me 2 attempts at age 16, but I managed to pass the written on the first attempt at 60. Congratulations, Dave. You can still let us know what you are learning. Is there a new hobby or skill you're working on? Have you learned something completely new as an adult? What advice do you have for people who want to take on something new? Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at @CentralTimeWPR. Coming up after the news, it's pepper time. On Food Friday, a Wisconsin farmer helps us embrace pepper season at its best, sweet and hot peppers. And we'll ask for your favorite kind of pepper, how you like to cook with it, and where you stand on spiciness levels. Do you brave the hot peppers or try to keep things mild? We'll take your calls, and you can get us started right now with your comment over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. This is the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 7 on The Morning Show, Wisconsin's Superintendent of Public Instruction joins the show for a preview of the new school year and the COVID safety recommendations for districts around the state. That's Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, can you handle the heat of hot peppers, that is? It's peak pepper season in Wisconsin. Today on Food Friday, we're talking about all kinds of peppers, mild, sweet, hot, you name it. We'll learn more about the spice levels and get some ideas on how to use them all. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite type of pepper? How do you like to use them in your cooking? Is there a pepper you think people should eat more of? Or do you have a question about what to do with your bountiful crop in your garden or local farmer's market? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Katrina Becker is the owner of Cattail Organics, a 50-acre organic farm located in the northwest corner of Marathon County, serving areas like Wausau and Stevens Point. She's a commercial grower of peppers and has been involved with a variety of pepper breeding studies with UW-Madison. Kat, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Is this now the height of pepper season in Wisconsin? This is when they're coming fast and furious?
Yeah, I would declare that probably from the second to last week of August through the end of September in the southern part of the state, and unfortunately up north here, probably the last week in August through the second week in September, our peak pepper season. So we don't have a long pepper season here in Wisconsin, but this is definitely the time to enjoy it.
Now, you are heavily involved in peppers, growing them and helping research them and things like that. What is it that you like about peppers?
Well, I have to say, I am a fan of spicy food, so I do enjoy hot peppers, and I actually enjoy the milder hot peppers like poblanos and Anaheims the best. as well as sweet peppers. So I'm sure we'll have some questions about green peppers, but green peppers are actually just unripe peppers. So those tend to be my least favorite. But I do really enjoy the broad spectrum of all the spicy and sweet peppers we have.
What are your favorite things to do with those, I guess, mid-grade peppers, those poblanos that have some heat to them, but they're not, you know, acts of courage just to place them near your mouth?
Yeah, so for poblanos or Anaheim peppers, we really like to roast them, fire roast them. I know there's some instructions on your guys' website that I sent over for doing that and on your stove or grill. And then we like to stuff them. And so we could stuff them with meat or rice or quinoa or other vegetables. And then I think most famously with poblano peppers is chili rellenos, which are chili or those peppers that are stuffed with cheese and then breaded and fried. So, I mean, those are my favorite ways to eat them, as well as just in salsa, because they're less spicy. You can use way more of them in salsa than you would some of the very hot peppers.
You mentioned fire roasting peppers. You sent us a link to a recipe on how to do that. Can you talk us through the basics of making good homemade fire roasted peppers?
Yeah, so there are three main techniques for doing this. The easiest one, especially at this time of year, Wisconsinites love to grill. And so doing it over a hot charcoal grill is probably the easiest way. You get it hot like you would for brats or any meat or vegetables. And then you just can lightly toss the peppers with a little bit of olive oil if you'd like. And then you're just leaving them on the grill till you see like a char on the skin and rotating them. And then you can pull them off. You can kind of slough off the skin if you want to. We also enjoy them with the skin. The two other ways you can make them are in the oven using a broiler. So very similar. You're using a hot temperature, keeping the peppers pretty close. Definitely you want some ventilation fans on if you're using hot peppers in an oven, because you're gonna have to open it up and rotate them. And then the third pretty easy method is to do it over, if you have a gas range, you can kind of put it right on top of the gas range using tongs and rotate it. And so you're basically doing it over the flame like you would outside on a gas grill or something like that.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about peppers, sweet and hot, and what to do with them with Katrina Becker from Cattail Organics. She grows lots of peppers, helps research them too. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a pepper question about growing, cooking, eating peppers? Or do you have a favorite kind of pepper to share or a favorite recipe? 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go to your calls now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi. Charlie, are you there? Oh, not getting Charlie. Let's try Lois then in Onalaska. Lois, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Would you want to tell us about Lois?
Well, I love habanero peppers, but they're very, very strong or spicy. But I use one half cut up very finely in all of my chili and my barbecues I make, and it gives it just the right heat.
And I got to ask, do you keep the seeds in or do you take the seeds out of the recipe?
I take the seeds out.
Lois, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Katrina, a little bit of a hot pepper like a habanero can go a long way, right?
Absolutely. And something that I like to tell people now, especially people that are big habanero fans, because the flavor of a habanero is just fruity and delicious, but they're so spicy that often you don't want to add a lot to a recipe, is that if you are a gardener, or you can also look at the farmer's market, there are some heatless or low heat habaneros now available. There's a variety called Habanada, and then there's another variety called the Numix Suave Orange. And both of those are less spicy habaneros. And so you can enjoy some of the flavor and use more of them than you might be able to. Otherwise, if you're a super hot fan, obviously, habaneros are delicious and fruity, but very spicy.
Lois, thanks a lot for that call. I want to talk a little bit about growing peppers a little bit, Kat. And I know different varieties of peppers. Obviously, one's going to be hotter than another. But within that, are there things we can do when we're growing them to make a particular kind of pepper hotter or less hot?
So unfortunately, how hot the peppers are is going to be out of our control as gardeners for the most part. But with peppers, there's the genetic component of what makes them spicy. So like we know habaneros are spicier than jalapenos, but in a given year, you might have really spicy habaneros one year and less spicy another. People often notice that with more mild peppers like poblanos or jalapenos, they'll be like, wow, I used to be able to eat jalapenos, but this year they're too spicy for my garden. And that's an environmental factor that's impacting wow. them. And so it actually is something that you won't be able to control, unfortunately, on a garden-to-garden level. But it is one of the reasons you would notice some of the variation in hot peppers.
And for basics of growing our own peppers, obviously we're a little past planting season for peppers this year. But what are the keys? What are we looking for? I think of you got to have a lot of sun. What else do we need to know?
Yeah, so peppers really do like full sun and they do like heat, although you can very successfully grow peppers in Wisconsin. I mean, for gardeners, I almost always recommend if you're able to buy your seedlings, buying big, nice pepper seedlings can get you really far ahead and let you have a longer pepper season, unless you have a really ideal setup in your house. Growing your own pepper seedlings sometimes leads to spindly or small or not big enough seedlings. The other things are that you don't really want to over-fertilize peppers. So a lot of people will, I've heard actually on the Larry Mueller show, people call in and be like, my peppers aren't producing. Often that is because people are putting in so much nitrogen that the plants are just producing vegetative or leaf growth and not putting on fruit. So peppers actually don't need a super rich soil. They do need like a balanced, nice balanced compost or something. And then the other thing about peppers is they can be grown in the ground, but also they are happy to live in pots. And there are many varieties that do very well in pots. So they're an ideal patio plant.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. David is with us in Madison. David, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, David?
I just want to share a recipe for appetizer with green bell pepper.
And what else with the green bell pepper?
So just basically potato and beef. If you want, you can put pork, chicken, or any kind of protein.
David, thanks a lot for that call. So frying up those peppers with beef or other meats. And I think of like, you know, a Philly cheesesteak. One of the keys there is those bell peppers. Katrina, any favorite pepper and meat combos in your mind?
Oh, well, I mean, I think there's a very classic Midwestern stuffed pepper that involves kind of a tomato base and rice and beef, ground beef. And that's a great one. Obviously, peppers really pair well with most proteins. So they do well with shredded chicken. They do great with pork, with steak, with venison if you're a hunter, and also with fish, and as well as obviously non-meat proteins. So, I mean, peppers are super versatile in that way. I would say for, you know, frying up peppers, if you are not a gardener or if you don't have your peppers set aside for the year already, the Italian frying peppers are some of the best that are really in peak season right now. There's a variety called Carmen that many farmers have by name at the farmer's market. That's a great one that's good for stuffing, but also wonderful for using in like sautés or pan frying with meats.
Thanks, David, for that call. We're talking to Kat Becker, owner and operator of Cattail Organics in Athens in Marathon County. It's Food Friday. We're talking about growing, eating, cooking with all manner of peppers, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried different kinds of peppers in your garden or maybe at the farmer's market? Do you have a standby recipe? Do you have a question for our guest on what to do with the peppers, maybe in your own garden? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation. Check out another recipe coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Kat Becker. She owns and operates a 50-acre organic farm in Marathon County called Cattail Organics. She's teaching us about peppers. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorites, your garden stories, your recipes, and more. 800-642-1234. Kat, before we go back to our callers, I want to check out a recipe you shared with us. We've got it at WPR.org/Food Friday. This is a sauce. It's a sheet pan sweet pepper and tomato sauce spread. So we use up some of our tomatoes too. Yeah. What do we need for this?
So this is one of my most favorite super simple ways to enjoy all of the ripe peppers and tomatoes that we're surrounded by at this time of year. And if you're a gardener, you're swimming in them. And if you're going to the farmer's market, you're probably buying a lot of them. And if you're in a CSA, then you're probably receiving a lot of them. So I like to do a lot of sheet pan sauces at this time of year. You can use, we like cherry tomatoes. It's like a way to indulge in those sweet cherry tomatoes. So you need a few pints of cherry tomatoes. Otherwise, you can dice up some Roma tomatoes or other heirloom or beefsteak tomatoes. You're going to then toss those. So it's about 2 pounds of tomatoes, a pound and a half. Toss them in a little olive oil, about a tablespoon. Lay them out on a baking sheet. And then on a separate sheet, you're going to take some peppers. So you can use 3 or 4 ripe red peppers. You can throw in some green ones if you want to, and a spicy one if you're a spicy person. And then a big sweet onion, if you can cut that up into strips like you are cutting the peppers as well. And toss that with some olive oil. And then you're going to be adding a little bit of diced garlic to both of your sheets and some salt, sea salt and pepper. And then you're going to roast them in the oven. And quite honestly, you can roast them at any temperature between 350 and 450. It depends on how close you want to watch them. But you're cooking them for about half an hour or 45 minutes till they start to cook down and caramelize a little bit. And then pull them out of the oven. You can toss them together in a big bowl. If you want more of a traditional tomato sauce texture, you can use an immersion blender or food processor once it's a little bit cooled down to puree it into a chunky sauce or even a much more fine sauce. Otherwise, we just like to use that straight on pastas or rices or as a side dish. And it's also wonderful cool. So you can put it in the refrigerator and then spread it on toast or bread on a hot summer day. It's just a versatile way to kind of celebrate the season.
Find that recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go back to your calls now. Janice is with us in Vilas County. Janice, hi.
Oh, good afternoon. I've had ongoing arguments with different relatives. They tell me that red peppers are just overripe green peppers. But then where do the yellow peppers and the orange peppers come from? Are those all a separate variety, or how do we get different colored peppers?
Janice, thanks for the call. Kat, you touched on this earlier. Give us the whole story of these bell peppers, yeah. Please.
This is a great question and definitely something that I am constantly explaining to people. So Janice, you are not the only one debating this with your family. So green peppers are unripe peppers. You can also buy or find unripe peppers of other colors. There are white unripe peppers and purple unripe peppers. So they'll have the same flavor as a green pepper. Green peppers can ripen into a variety of different colors. So there are green peppers that turn red. There are green peppers that turn orange. There are green peppers that turn yellow. Most purple peppers ripen to red, and most of the white peppers ripen to kind of a yellow or an orange. But that's a great question, and often exactly the question people have. So green peppers can be any sort of unripe pepper. So if you see a green pepper and you let it ripen, it can turn yellow or orange or red. Red is just the most common, and it's the most common in commercial greenhouses and gardening stores as well.
Janice, thanks for the call. We'll go to Martina now and Kashina. Martina, hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm so excited about this subject. I have lived on and off in New Mexico for several years. And when I first moved there, I did not understand the obsession with peppers. And they ask you if you want green or red on your dish. And, you know, however, over the years, I have developed the Pavlovian response to starting to have my mouth water if I think about green chilies. And so for those of us that are trying to cope without fresh hatch green chili, you can get it canned, but look for hatch. And it comes from New Mexico, where pain is a flavor.
Martina, thanks for that. Pain is a flavor, Kat. What do you think?
I mean, I think that there are a lot of people that feel that way. There's definitely the hot pepper aficionados, even though Wisconsin is not necessarily hot pepper country. I did want to mention that if you are a big fan of those hatch chilies, you can grow several varieties up north. People will call them Anaheim or New Mex peppers. Those are the peppers that you're talking about. Those are what Hatch chilies are, or that type of pepper. And there's a great variety that Johnny Select Seeds has called Highlander that is an early ripening variety. And so ours are red ripe right now. They also have, you know, you can harvest them green, but people often struggle to grow those southern chilies. So Highlander is a great variety if you are a former New Mexico resident, or you just love those chilies.
All right, something to grow next year, Martina. Thanks for the call. We're talking to Kat Becker from Cattail Organics. It's a Food Friday conversation about peppers. Back to your calls now. Russ is with us in Stoughton. Russ, hi.
Hi, great program. My favorite peppers are the bell green peppers. I often eat them raw and in all sorts of ways. But I have two questions for the host. Number one, she mentioned throwing green peppers on the grill to char. Did she cut out the tops and clean out all the seeds before she threw them on the grill? And my second question is, what is her favorite question for making stuffed green peppers with ground beef and rice and tomato sauce and et cetera?
All right, Russ, thanks for the call. So first of all, seeds and stem on when you're grilling those bell peppers, Kat?
So that's really personal preference. And, you know, we're kind of messy cooks, so I'm comfortable with a few seeds sticking on my peppers, which is what will happen if you grill them whole. For poblano peppers and some of the flatter green peppers, I don't bother to take the seeds or the stem off. You can always cut it off after, once they're a little bit cooled down, and you can pull the whole thing out and then chop them up. So for us, we always leave it in, but it's, again, personal preference. And then the second question was about my favorite recipe. Is that correct?
For the stuffed bell peppers. Yeah.
Yeah. So while I did provide you with a recipe, and while I am a CSA farmer, so part of my job is to provide people with a lot of cooking information, I am not a good recipe follower myself, but we like to use brown rice, because it holds up a little bit better to cooking. And so I'll just make some brown rice in my Instapot or on the stovetop. And then, you know, I have three kids and my husband, so we eat a lot of peppers. So we'll probably make, you know, a couple cups of rice, saute that with ground beef or venison, onion and garlic. If you have fresh basil, it's great in there as well. And then I will just use tomatoes, but you can use tomato sauce or tomato puree in there to make it kind of a thick paste, and then put that inside of the pepper. And then we like to top that with cheddar cheese. So that's my favorite recipe. But there's a lot of great, you know, one of the best things about the internet is that there's a lot of great food blogs with people that are better at writing proportions than I am. So if you look up some of those keywords, I'm sure you will find something wonderful.
Thanks for that call. In our last half a minute or so, Kat, what pepper that's growing right now are you most excited to be ready to harvest?
Oh, I think I mentioned the Carmen peppers. Mm-hmm. Those are a pretty amazing one. I also am doing a participatory breeding project with UW-Madison and some other farmers around the upper Midwest. And they're these little baby bell peppers that are a little bit bigger than a snack pepper and smaller than a bell pepper. And they're probably the best flavored peppers I've ever had. So those I have been very excited to try. They're a mid-sized pepper, but Carmen's, I mean, go to the farmer's market and buy Carmen peppers. They're sweet. They have a great texture. Children love them. Adults love them. They're the best multi-purpose pepper. This is Carmen pepper season. So
excellent.
That's what I'm enjoying right now.
Kat, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
That's Katrina Becker, owner of Cattail Organics. She joined us for a Food Friday conversation about peppers. Just had a flashback to my early cooking experiments making stuffed bell peppers. You got to cook the rice first. Otherwise, it's very unpleasantly crunchy. I learned the hard way. Coming up Monday on Central Time, many Americans have received a new kind of child tax credit. We'll find out how that's affecting families and food insecurity here in Wisconsin. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time. Sometimes you can find cool stuff for free in old-fashioned classified ads, online postings, or neighborhood newsletters. Here's one that got a lot of attention this week. As reported by Newsweek, a Florida resident posted a Craigslist ad for an old piano. List price, $1, but the owner says you can have it for free. You have to pick it up. Fair enough. Pianos are heavy. It's a piano from 1966. The picture shows it looks like it's in okay shape. Tuned less than 2 years ago. Piano bench included. So far, pretty normal. Why did this go viral? It's all about this one line in the post. Quote, not possessed or haunted in any way. End quote. That's gotten the post shared tens of thousands of times on various outlets with people wondering if that raises more questions than it answers. Like, is it really haunted and that's why it's been given away for free? Or did it used to be haunted, but it's cool now? I got an old used piano for free from a friend years ago. It was pretty beat up, but still playable. I sort of tuned it myself, not well, but close enough. And sometimes, even when I wasn't playing it, you'd suddenly hear keys being pressed and mysterious music coming out of it. But it was the cats or the kids. Or was it? This is Central Time.